actually where it says already implementing 50-50 quota, strive to achieve the same. However, it is not necessary to regulate. It is the agency's segment. And I would have thought that the agency is actually pushing for the 50-50 representation to be regulated. So I see clarity in this regard as to what is the meaning of this. We are pushing an issue, but we are saying it's not necessary for each to be regulated.
Thank you. Enforcing such parties which are still undermining Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the engaging in this interesting debate. Firstly, I want to ask ourselves, who are we? We are here not to help us, but we are a women's caucus with a common vision, fighting for the rights of women in Parliament. And I want to align myself with the view of the Chairperson Conduct text, that all over the world there is what we call inequality, which breeds poverty and crime. And all this is because of the lack of willingness of men to surrender their power. Then we will not come across a situation where we have people willing to say, yes, we can have a women being equal to ourselves. This women's caucus should forget who we come from, should forget political parties, and just focus on the willingness to take ourselves up as women. Talking of the Constitution, in the fourth parliament, we had Comrade Ben Churro, who was conducting a political economy course, and I happened to be one of his students. He said we must ask ourselves a question as lawmakers, that is the Constitution forever? And if it is, what are we doing in this building? We are here to make the law, to make sure that the law of the country promotes our the welfare of the poorest, the lowest, which are women. You find inequality, you find poverty, you find illiteracy. It's all in women. And we must try by all means to make sure that we don't air ourselves with the Constitution. If the Constitution is the problem, let's talk about that. The Constitution has been amended many times already. And constitutions of many countries get amended because people can't pass and do certain things. And I think this women's parliament will have failed the women of South Africa if we come here and say, we can't push here because the Constitution, we must deal with that Constitution and make sure that at the end of the day, we achieve equality in totality in the lives of women.
Number six.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thanks for the presentation from the committee. I also just want to say that I do believe that it is also incumbent for the IEC itself to manage to identify discriminatory practices by the institutional governance. And therefore, assist us in giving the center for this nation. And they should also get suggestions from you. Section 9 of the Constitution of Zimbabwe decides equality. And that equality is a process of the process of legal and democratic union. And this is why, therefore, itself also managed to offend the individual workers in the United States that somehow, whatever the thing is going to do, violate this Section 9. My next to me actually indicated a basic principle of development. Then if you realize that it's being violated, you have to actually take it upon yourself to maybe put forward or initiate processes to tell the changes about change. There's no way in which South Africa will actually move forward if we don't emphasize on equality. You can't keep on talking about gender equality then. Leaving women behind and hoping that the country will manage to make a way. It actually delays us. And as caucus of women in parliament, what we are actually advocating for is for political parties to have equal representation of women and men. And you have to actually assist us to manage to realize that. And ourselves, I think, already as caucus of women in parliament, we are talking with one voice. We know that other political parties are not doing it yet. And maybe the women in those political parties, they are the minority. And therefore, their voices will not be heard. But if we do it jointly, at the country level, that's the right route to actually utilize, to be sure that this, that we are actually advocating for, can be realized. We were doing very well as women in parliament previously. And when you look at right at the beginning, when women in parliament actually said, we want a woman to speak, I don't know whether goes far, if you remember that. And women across political parties and said, we want the Speaker of Parliament to be a woman. And that's why we got Ms. Regine Wanda to be the woman. She was supported by women from across political parties. So we need to fight together as women of caucus in parliament to see to it that we make this dream to be realized. And of course, maybe for ourselves as the ANC, but now it's from the ANC. But now it actually works for us, the ANC. I don't know how women manage to vote for parties that don't actually recognize them, because this is a safe truth. But because here is the platform that actually advocates for the rights of women jointly across the political party lines, we will together want to say that let's have quotas, the kind of quotas that will ensure that there will be equal political party representation and participation for women and men. Thank you, Chairperson.
The committee that gave them this statistic.
they are going to vote for women. While they don't want to vote for women, it is undermining democracy to force that on them. Now, I personally really value the, what should we say, the example of the ANC in terms of the voices that they have in the party for 2 weeks. And the one particularly is that I know that without pressure in a lot of areas, things don't happen just naturally. So we do have to exert a certain amount of pressure. So it would be that political parties and MPs do actually start to make that cultural pressure within the party in terms of wanting to see this equality. While women catch up, because you know, the majority of women in our party, for example, will list men on the party. And so it's very difficult to, without getting the reputation of being autocratic and imposing your will on other people, it's very difficult to start tangling with those lists too dramatically. But there is a definite attempt to look at making sure that women are not kept out of the top of those lists. So well done to the ANC for leading by example, because let's face it, that's the true way that we grow as a country, to actually be inspired by what we see happening and working, rather than feeling somebody's told us what to do and they're imposing something on us, because that brings out the rebel in most people. So to see that depth of us growing as a nation, I would like to see us exerting that pressure in the sense that men actually feel that they can't just ignore the situation. And also us encouraging women to have confidence in other women. And a lot of that comes from people like myself and yourself. Because if we don't inspire that confidence, people are not going to actually vote for us. So we actually have a huge responsibility. We have to inspire that kind of confidence. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I would like to move from where Honourable Majake contributed, of course, respectfully to all others who have made their contribution. I think we shouldn't lose sight of the history and the road that we have traveled as women. We used to have women's coalition at some point. And that women's coalition had an impact on what happens here in Parliament. And so I would just request that part of what we need to do, besides the legislation, is continuing that hand-holding that we used to do before, which I personally think we have lost it quite a bit. 15, 20 years down the line, it's too short a time for us to lose sight of that unity that we had before. Also, Chairperson, I'd like to say, adding to what Honourable Majake said, I have great respect for the IEC because we have worked with the IEC for a very long time. And therefore, I also do believe that the IEC cannot say we just IEC, we're counting votes and all that. They've got a way bigger role because as women we're trying to make sure that every sector of our society, every administration and management always has to keep it in mind that the interest of women cannot be pursued by women alone in their space. And therefore, I'm asking the IEC that when you write reports to us, for me this isn't an acceptable way of writing a report, because I know the IEC is so capable of writing. Here, there's no background, there's no nothing, it's just a report to the multi-party women's caucus, and then it just gives you what the party said. My view is that, I don't know whether this is the IEC's report or not, because I would have expected that the report of the IEC be attended the same way that the IEC reports to others, that gives it the credibility that it deserves. So for some of us who haven't even had the chance of knowing that this was something going on, this is going to be on record, IEC.
and there are people who are going to come 30 years down the line and pull out these reports on the basis that we're still in the study. And therefore, if I'm wrong, can I be clarified? Because I wouldn't think that this should be a report. This should have given us at least a background as to how we came to this, what happened, so that for those who were not in that process are able to easily associate with the report, if that can be clarified for me. Thank you.
I think really as women, if it needs to revisit the constitution chairperson, honorable members. The document that we've got before you is an excerpt of the meeting, of the minutes of the meeting of the National Fertilizing Committee. We were here on the 31st of May. We made a presentation to you. Where a copy of that presentation, we assumed that this is a follow-up to a discussion that we are already familiar and therefore that it was not necessary for us to go through the process that we have already gone through. When we left here, our understanding was that we were going to be soliciting the opinion of the political parties as represented within the National Party Licensing Committee. We have done so. And in having done so, and I think it's important for me to emphasize this because someone was saying that the report was actually discharged. This meeting or forum can't change the minutes of another forum. That forum is a forum that has endorsed this as a full reflection of the discussion as on the day when the National Fertilizer Committee was consulted. So if you are not happy with the quality of the input of the political parties, it's not a reflection of the IEC. It's a reflection of the input of the political parties, your representatives within the National Fertilizer level. So this minute, the XFWCD, have already been endorsed by the National Fertilizer Committee, where your representatives sit. And then we just took what they have given us and said to you, this is what they are saying. We can't change what they have said to us.
Thank you. on record, the gender budgeting system does strive, and historically has always strived towards gender redress by the financing of government different programs, which would obviously be across different sectors and also across different spheres of government. Our gender responsive budgeting, I think, internationally has been recognized as going beyond the mere salience of women, expenditure on women and expenditure on girls in budget. Gender budgeting is actually so much more than that, and I think it's sort of currently internationally well accepted that gender responsive budgeting is a planned event in a country's budget process. And we refer back then obviously to our rich history, going back to the 1990s, with the Women's Budget Initiative, and obviously key, very importantly, supported by the Joint Budget Committee in Parliament. In terms of some of the historical evidence, many countries have used various gender responsive budgeting tools. Many of them have been linked to donor financing. Some of the experiences indicate that once the donor financing element dissipates, the countries do not necessarily sustain the initiative. However, it is encouraging that there are some countries, and India here is particularly notable, where even after withdrawal of the donor funding, the program continues. And there are certainly key lessons to be drawn from that program, which has continued, and other programs as well. Just also to say that the gender mainstreaming is not simply about saying, okay, this is a particular budget submission, yes, we know that there's a gender impact that's intended there. It goes way beyond that. If one wants to do proper gender mainstreaming and proper gender responsive budgeting, then one needs to actually analyze the gender patterns in society and identify the gender behavior that will be addressed, and then actually specifically plan, performance plan, particular programs in government in order to bring about those impacts. And that then is what one puts extra funding towards, the particular impact that's identified. So those would be interventions, obviously, for females and males within society in terms of the behavioural responses and effects that one would be targeting. So the critical point here, and these are issues that we have been discussing with the Department of Women, obviously leading, is that the gender-aware performance plan is critical, and then the gender-responsive budgeting responds to a particular plan which has a gender dimension in order to promote gender equality in a particular area. So let's say, for example, if it's agricultural support, in a particular agricultural support program, there would be a particular area that that would be identified where, if that change was made, that would benefit and promote the well-being of women and the poor and so on. So one of the key things, if we come back to budget and gender budgeting currently, is that the lack of gender disaggregated data, and I'll come back to that a little later, does hinder gender responsive budgeting. Because while we do throughout government have many policies that are focused on gender empowerment, often they're not marked as such in our financial system. And sometimes we battle to identify them. And the problem is, if we need to start, we need to understand where we are at in terms of our programs, our government programs, and the gender status in various sectors, and then we need to obviously, building on that, understand what improvements we would make going forward. So that we don't have the properly identified gender program in our financial system, and also we don't currently yet have a coherent gender responsive budgeting policy framework. I want to quote from Eye on the Money, just to say that while that is true and that we do realize that to deepen gender responsive budgeting, we will have to address those items in the first bullet, i.e. to be able to identify the gender aspects of programs, as well as to have a coherent policy framework. First and foremost, we also need to acknowledge that while a sufficient budget is one of the conditions necessary for effective implementation, it is by no means the only requirement, and it cannot rectify limitations to the underlying conceptualization of programs. And the Department of Women in our discussions with them is keenly aware of these issues and is in discussion with various line departments around some of their programs in looking at ways in which they can be engendered. So we also need to realize and acknowledge, we do, that data collection is costly if departments have to increase the amount of data that they have to collect. However, to the extent that we need to collect certain information in a gender disaggregated way so that we can understand the gender impact that the program is having, then such requests for data will need to be made. We just need to be very careful that we don't have an approach where we say that we need sort of every piece of information, you know, might be gender disaggregated by next year or something, which would be a huge cost. But focused on identifying programs and certainly to demonstrate the impact thereof. Data on, just coming back to show some of the difficulty, data on gender-based spending and the redress of gender-based violence. We did a search. I just want to show you, for example, what our financial systems will show if one does a quick search. So a lot of the detail may be laid in subcategories, but on a general search where we looked at gender, violence, women, prevention and victims as the key words of the search, the data that we got is reflected in the table there. So what you'll see is that these are whole government programs. I'm sure that everybody will realize that this is not only the full calculation of government's gender spending. And what is also clear, for example, if you just take the last one, crime prevention and support, is that is the calculation for the full program, but not necessarily for the gender aspect thereof. That being said, what one is picking up here is some national and provincial programs, and those in the criminal justice sector and social sector. The transfers that are made that we've got last year are basically to the non-profit institutions for crime prevention and victim support. And the bulk of the spending in the programs would be for personnel. I'm sure that everyone can appreciate that while that is obviously a data that can be picked up very quickly in the system, that is not going to support a proper gender responsive budget. And so one could also go a little bit further and look at trying to do a women's budget as has been done before, and we can certainly do that and go and look a little bit more deeply for certain programs and projects, identify the ones, make certain assumptions, for example, if we have spending on child maintenance sports, we might want to make an assumption, you know, that is a gender-sensitive spend. And we could do that kind of simulate that women's budget. But I think internationally, proper gender budgeting and gender responsive budgeting actually goes beyond that. So if we go over to gender responsive budgeting for the future, I think we do need to focus on the specific planned gender impact required of different programs of government and different spheres, and then specifically track how we would budget to that and the effects of that spending, so that when we do have that spending, we do get the impact that's intended, and that those programs then, where they don't reach certain impact, would be able to obviously modify and improve on their sort of delivery in order to achieve that. Clearly, in our discussions that we're having around this, we are being engaged on the Department of Women. The Department of Women, I know, is in discussion with other departments in relation to the engendering of their programs. From the National Treasury side, we've made it very clear to the Department of Women, and obviously are happy to make it very clear to the caucus today, that we are very willing and quite excited to implement a gender-responsive budgeting policy framework that is a government-endorsed framework. And essentially, we are waiting for the performance planning in terms of specific programs, which would then come through in terms of budget requests. In terms of these responses and requests that come, obviously in terms of the sort of credibility of the general budget process and the way the budget process works, these programs would obviously come into the mainstream and into the budget process in the same way as we view other government programs and requests for funding. And they would go to the same adjudication committees and obviously be limited by the same fiscal constraints that we have on all programs. But that is not a reason, I think, to be disheartened. It's a matter of line departments prioritizing the engineering of their programs and of shifting money towards that space and away from others. Unfortunately, that's the fiscal environment we're in. It would have been probably better a decade or so ago, easier to add money. But this is true for all programs and all priorities at this stage. The funding allocations, obviously, in the budget process are guided by the DPME's priorities mandating process, which is obviously aligned to all the plans, the various different government plans. I won't mention them, they're all there. And essentially, costed policies are submitted into the budget process then by the line departments that are responsible for the more detailed planning around this. This would then go to the various adjudication committees that are part of the budget process, and ultimately would go before the Minister's Committee on the Budget for consideration, and then to Cabinet. And I think just by way of summary, these programs would be assessed in terms of their priority status, the impact that they would make, the department's ability and readiness to implement them, and obviously, given the fiscal constraints currently, it is about reallocating baseline expenditure. The Department of Women is also keenly aware that the NTSF, the new round of NTSF planning, would be coming up, so I think they aim to put a big footprint in that process. And generally speaking, what you see there in the diagram then is the expenditure across government by different sectors. The important point, I think, to note is that the gender impacts are not clearly visible. The gender-sensitive planning needs to be sharpened. Gender-sensitive indicators and targets need to be linked to these programs. And there was a 2015 directive, or is a 2015 directive, for economic empowerment to have a definite gender impact. Significant progress has been made for women in business, but obviously there are challenges which continue, and there does need to be a sharpening of the planning of gender impact within government programs that currently exist, and obviously also an identification of if there are other areas where there need to be new programs in order to have the required gender impact.
I don't know whether to continue with the gender issue.
one. Another hand. I can see people are moving out. Two. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. My concern is that
why do you not check that this business plan is arriving
Thank you very much, Chair. I think I align myself with what Colleague Chan has said and what the last speaker has said. But, you know, I want to appeal to ourselves as South Africans to close the book of lamentations. We must close that book. Because, you know, every time everybody coming to our community, they will tell us about the scarce resources. You know, I've been in the legislature since 1994. I don't remember any time when I was told that we've got plenty. They were always saying that. And whether there's plenty or there's little, women's issues have got to be prioritized. Not because we are kind, but because if we don't do that, the thing called inequality is going to increase, not only here. It's a problem throughout the globe. There are economists who are writing volumes and volumes on that subject, especially Professor Joseph Stiglitz, who is the most cited economist of our time. The effect of inequality is terrible to society. And we need to stand up and grab the bull by the horns as women, as this caucus. I want to suggest, Chairperson, that maybe you approach the parliamentary budget office and the Human Science Research Council to actually develop a paper for us to see how we can actually try to budget all departments, try to budget for women empowerment and the effect of budgeting for women in parliament empowerment from 1994 to date. I think they can come out with a short paper. And that document should always be in the handbag of every parliamentarian every day in parliament, so that when departments come to give input, the first question was, how are you doing with women empowerment? Every one of us should ask that question. And we will be basing our argument on facts that have been researched by capable institutions. I think that would go a long way to assist us. But I also want to emphasize that, you see, the lack of growth, the inequality of the South African economy, it's not the fault of government. If you check, government is actually empowering this economy. It is private sector that is not coming into the party. We should also, as this committee, try to see how we can influence private sector to also, you know, be conscious of women empowerment. We've got quite a few women nowadays in the private companies. Find a way of actually talking to them. What are you doing, sister, in your situation as CEO, as whatever position in the private sector? I think that if we can find that working together with them, Chairperson, a lot of progress can be.
But when I listen to all this, since we're writing in second, because it comes to you and then you want to give it back to the country of women. And as the honorable story, my story said, with which budget? Because if you look at the budget of that department, it's disgusting. Really, I think, as you have said, this committee has to agree on one thing, that we are going to maybe contact the Minister of the Women's Department, who can unpack, you know, what she has been doing. And also the issue of the gender focal testing is one of the issues that we think is not addressed. We have been talking about all this. So there are many things that we have to do, but we cannot have this situation of writing circles and also say that wants to run away and say, no, this is not the, it must be done this way. Well, in actual fact, in the first year that we are here, this has been an issue. But nevertheless, I think we thank you for this part of your presentation. We can go to the next one. Pardon? Yes, you can.
Right. Okay, so I must apologize because I think I must have misframed what I was trying to say. When I said that there's no coherent gender budgeting policy framework, I didn't mean that there's no gender policy work going on in the Treasury at all and that people are not looking at the gender perspective when particular costed budget submission comes in. What I was referring to was, and I think there was an analogy made of sort of looking towards the light. I think we are looking towards the light, but are we all looking towards the same light? That was where I was going with that. In terms of employing women and looking at the gender outcomes, I was trying to imply or try to convey the message that we need to sharpen what we're doing on the gender responsive budgeting, that we need to be very clear about what the engendered aspects are that we want from every single policy. And it's a very difficult terrain because I do hear what is being said, that it might be giving the impression that Treasury is not committed to gender responsive budgeting. And that is not the impression I'm trying to give. It's just a difficult terrain because government's priorities are determined in a priority mandating process. That then leads the budget process. The gender footprint there is not as strong possibly as it should be. And I think that the Department of Women is intending in the next round of the NDSS planning to address that. So that is the beacon that guides the budget policy. There is the Department of Women who must set the policy agenda. The budgeting process from a technical point of view can address gender budgeting in any particular way. In other words, there's no hindrance. There's nothing that the budgeting process can't do to enable and assist gender responsive budgeting. But what it should be doing, it should be determined by how we go about, what is the general approach to gender budgeting. So that, I think, is what we're also grappling with. But in the meantime, there is gender responsive work going on. Then there are obviously also line departments that are responding in terms of their own program. So if it's agriculture, it's an agricultural program, for example, or if it is an education program. So there are line departments involved as well. So it is important that the Treasury is also looking at what these other stakeholders and the people that have to execute these programs are saying, what they are really planning on the ground in terms of the engendering. Part of the problem with this disaggregated information is not just that departments haven't categorized it that way in the financial system. It is that even in my department, some of this data is not collected in a gender disaggregated way. So Department of Women is also in discussion with SASSA in this regard. So I apologize profusely if I've left the impression that we're not doing any gender sensitive analysis when we look at costing and so on. I meant when I started out by saying that in terms of what we normally do, we are looking at this, but we do need to sharpen it, and we do need to make sure, is it going to be aligned what we do? Do we do it to the best of our ability in terms of the new MTSS and the new requirements for gender budgeting compared to, for example, 20 years ago? The other very, very important thing, I think, is that we also want to acknowledge that the tail mustn't wag the dog. So when we spoke last, in our last meeting with the Department of Women, DDG Maloleke was saying, if we're doing gender-responsive budgeting and we're not doing some of the other policy training around the gender planning, then the tail might be wagging the dog, which I think is just something, I mean, obviously you need both, and we need to have both, but we do need to make sure that the tail and the dog are kind of well aligned. In terms of the business plans and looking at that, we certainly do look at what are the impacts, how could this better, have a better impact and so on. But on the other hand, also remember that as the Treasury, not the line department, we would know even more particularly how to engender a particular program even better. In terms of the fiscal tightness, I do not want to leave the impression that means that we should not move money to where it needs to go to engender programs. I was trying to indicate that it's a little bit more difficult, but certainly the money needs to be shifted to where the priorities are, and we should try, and that is also something I was trying to convey, we should try to ensure that in that gender-sensitive planning, we have proper targets so that we're able to ensure that when we put money to those programs, that we do get the benefits from that, and that if we don't get the benefits from that, the changes are made in those programs. Now, obviously saying that those are programs across government sectors and across spheres. So it is a very complex thing, but it's certainly not something that we mustn't be grappling with. In terms of this, I think the main thing then was to say, I was trying to say it should be very visible what we're targeting, and that we should go at it in a very systematic and rigorous way, or more systematic and rigorous way. In terms of the PDO and the HSRC, yes, work can be done on this. We ourselves have had a look at some of the country experiences. I think the bottom line, and even as we briefed our minister on this, the bottom line is that the budgeting system in South Africa is not in any way going to hinder gender-responsive budgeting. And we can deepen gender-responsive budgeting using our current system. It's just about which would be the best way to do that. We need to have the guidance from the Department of Women and the other line departments in terms of how they're actually trying to implement and so that we can sharpen the effects of this. I think internationally, what you'll also discover is looking at these other countries is that some of the countries, and I think that's where the reform didn't last, is the reform was informed. So in other words, you set in a budget guideline. All departments must have a sub-program in each program that deals with gender. And then after a while it becomes apparent that people just put money there, but it doesn't really mean anything. So it's just a change in form, but not a real change in substance as to how we deliver programs on the ground. And I think what is exciting, I think for us in the Treasury, is in our discussions with the Department of Women, the intention is to really change things on the ground and not just have something where we can say, okay, here's our women's budget or here's our gendered budget in that sense. And then in terms of the budget for the Department of Women itself, I think essentially in the beginning with the EDMOS process, there was a particular process run and the budgets were determined, like, for example, X amount for a ministry and X amount for a deputy ministry and so on. Those budget processes each year, though, do consider baselines, and the budgets do go through, obviously, the process of the Mint Combine and Cabinet and then to Parliament for that budget to be voted. Obviously, each vote has an opportunity every year to make a case in terms of their budget. So certainly, any requirements there, whatever, should be put forward by the Department of Women.
Thank you, Chair.
we've taken up the challenge to see how we can affect this policy aim within the budget constraints that we have. We don't think of this as an excuse not to do anything. So we've taken up that challenge, and this is our effort to give effect to this, what we view as priority policy. So we've been taking part in the interdepartmental consulting, and there was broad agreement within the consulting to focus on indigenous women and girl children in our policy design. We've had stakeholder meetings this year, first on the 13th of July, coordinated by the Department of Women, and we had national departments, provincial departments, NGOs, and businesses at this meeting. To also have a consultative approach to the development of the policy, but also to understand that as women in different areas in the country, all our expertise requires to be provided for everyone. After that consultative meeting in July, we also had a workshop with the provincial departments where a lot of useful learnings came out of programs that are already in place. And we are most committed to the different departments on the strides that are already made. And the national interdepartmental team hopes to coordinate these efforts better and make sure that this is a priority everywhere. I'm also happy to report that very recently, on the 18th of October, Cabinet approved the policy framework developed by the Department of Women on sanitary dignity for publication for public comment.
We have got the policy framework that has been approved by Cabinet on the 18th of October. And in the policy framework, we have said that due to the constraints, we understand the issue that it affects all women, not only indigent women. But our proposal was that we start with the indigent women, those who cannot, who can really not afford sanitary towels. And then we can look at the issue of broadening when we are better in the system. And then our immediate focus was to propose that the funding should be through the expenditure side. That is, government is responsible for the funding of sanitary products, but through the expenditure side. That is, national departments and provincial departments provide their necessary funding through the prioritization of budget allocation to national treasury through the budget process. That is the proposal, and that is the proposal that is on the policy framework, which has been approved by Cabinet on the 18th of October.
Targeted to specific school equipment.
Chairperson. No, mine is a clarification question. I heard Treasury say that they are going to deal with this issue of sanitary towels or whatever from the side of expenditure, not from the side of state. And they are going to, it would appear that there is going to be a conditional grant to provinces for sanitary towels. I said to be corrected, that is my understanding. That is going to take care of school children, the girl child at school. What about the women outside that are indigent? When you take care of this item under expenditure, what do you intend to do? Are you going to subsidize and bring the item or to be sold at a very low price for an ordinary man to be able to afford a pack of sanitary towels? Or are you going to regulate the price and say in any store and any brand of sanitary towels is not going to exceed a certain amount like we do with petrol? If you say a pack of towels is not going to exceed 5 rand, any brand in any shop, that would be a way of coming halfway to assist. Until what time that government is able to subsidize, but what are you going to do for ordinary women?
Let me take the positive report that was given to us. I would like the treasurer, the national treasurer, to turn to page 30 of the document. My question is, what is the criteria in terms of, because the allocation budget 2017-2018 in the state case reflected 1.2 million. Whereas the overall verified the 6 million, the state cap is 6 million and is very over. Thank you very much.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Let me join my colleagues by appreciating the presentation. But I just wanted to check on the issue of the provinces, because when reading the first line, are already implementing the programs, but the provinces that you've mentioned here, and I left there five. What about the status of the other provinces, the three? The other one is the issue of the policy. I think it will assist us if we see the policy before it's being approved, so that maybe if there's a need for us to discuss it, we must discuss it on time rather than the policy coming here after it has been endorsed. Then what will be our role then in that case? I appreciate that they will prioritize the indigent women and girl child, especially in rural areas, but further to say that if we are able to distribute femidom, which are expensive, more expensive than the sanitary towels, is it going to be difficult for us to distribute free sanitary towels to rural women and their children if we are able to provide femidom? Because they are very much expensive than sanitary towels.
Trained in actually producing this
interdepartmental task team, they are part of that policy framework that is as to how we deal with them, because this is led by the Department of Human. It is also part of that policy framework. So those issues we see when that policy framework is stipulated. And I must say that those issues we agree that the indigenous women are not at school and then they have to be looked at. So the interdepartmental task team is looking at that, and the Department of Social Development is also part of that task team. And the issue of, and also the Department of Small Business is also part of that task team. So those issues are in that policy framework that will be stipulated.
My colleague is saying it's a very holistic approach to the problem, from production to sourcing the materials, right through to distribution. It tends to look at the problem holistically and responsibly. On the amounts on the slides, if they are not correct, and I can certainly correct them, these were inputs on request that we received. So if they are not the correct amounts, I stand to be corrected. And I would definitely think of them as a minimum. There are other provinces that also have programs. We don't have the exact allocation necessarily there. There was a question about with the eight provinces versus the five. The five ones were the ones that were able to give us the information. The other ones had difficulty separating out the amounts because it was a different program in which it was allocated. About the eight provinces, it is there were programs reported in every province except the Western Cape. Then about the distribution of different products, so I think it is widely accepted that if we can we can distribute sanitary pads relatively easily, it's a question of doing so. I'm sure you're serious about that. What do we do for ordinary women? I think the question is also one of phasing. At this point in time, this is the program that we think is most effective and most efficient, and we agree that at the very least, government should be targeting its interventions at the most vulnerable in society. And that is for indigenous women and children. And that's why the policy is written up, the policy framework is written up in the way that it is. Thank you.
I don't know whether Honorable Zandi, you were talking about the project.
I was not responding to your question. I don't know whether the policy framework it is not yet created for the public input. It is embargoed. Because you should actually be in a position just to brief us, to give us a summary of what is contained in there, so that we're not kept in the dark. But if it is secret up until it is circulated, then I would understand it. But certainly, I was not responding. Yes. your intention as of now, if you've got financial constraints, is to effect price regulation or to subsidize?
As you have said, due to fiscal constraints, our immediate focus now is to expenditure side, that is through budgeting process. That is, provinces and national departments will submit the budget to national treasury and national treasury will fund. And at this stage, we can't do price regulation or of the program. It's going to be subsidized.
I didn't get a clear understanding in terms of the criteria that they are using. When the attitude